Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
All right, we close in our 500th podcast.
Oh, yeah, what are we on?
We are on 498.
Oh, wow.
Next week, we will be off because I will be in Las Vegas for Dice Tower West.
Then we'll just jump right to 500, right?
And then we'll jump right to 500.
That's when Dave, we have to practice for our musical.
Oh, yes. Right. Yeah.
Y'all will be doing dress rehearsals.
Yes. Yeah. I guess we can do that while Randy's away.
Yeah. Reminder that this Thursday, tomorrow, as you hear this probably, we have our Pokemon Day.
Oh, yeah.
Come right. In. If you have kids, bring kids in to draw Pokemon and
noon to
search
five,
for Pokemon. Noon to 5:30.
Noon to 5:30, yep. So, right. So, if you're bringing them by after school, you'll have a little bit of time. It was hugely popular last year.
Yep,
everybody had a great time.
Yep.
I have no reason to believe that it would suck this year.
There will be a plethora of Pokemon-related things
there
happening
will.
In our store.
There will.
Try Havoc and unleash
Do
the Squirtle
of War.
You know who my favorite Pokemon is.
Snorlax?
No, Bulbasaur.
Bulbasaur. That
Bulbasaur, duh,
sense.
Of course.
I didn't know that. I thought Snorlax was your favorite Pokemon.
No, remember, years back on Facebook, I followed this page that was called, like, Bulbasaur Propaganda or something like that. They had all, like, this, these really good memes and stuff with him. I don't have, like, a serious investment in him, but the Bulbasaurs seem like a some pretty cool Pokemon. And they were like the little ones that were marching to help him in the Detective Pikachu movie.
They were very, they're very nature like.
Yeah, that's
and
probably
that makes
why
sense
it
for you.
Although I have found out that Bulbasaur is, I think, puckish on the cartoons and stuff, and he like messes with the other ones. And there's one where he I believe if I'm remembering this right, he's on a snowy hillside, right?
Yep, sure.
And he sees people skiing and sledding down, and he just gets this, like, well, that looks like fun look, and he grabs, I think a Squirtle, because that's the little...
That's the water one, yeah.
It's a turtle, right?
Yeah, it's a turtle.
He just grabs it, flips on its back, leaps on it, and, like, starts sliding down the hill, and he's, like, having the best time, and the Squirtle is just like, ah!
Sounds like he's a monster.
Yeah, he's
a pocket monster, if you will.
He might be. You think we should alert the authorities?
Yes, let's get...
You're gonna rat him out?
We should put them all... I'm gonna ratata them out.
Oh. Nice. That's a deep
nice, good
deep
Pokemon.
Cut. Yeah.
Nick, do you have a favorite Pokemon?
Growlithe.
Oh,
Growlithe.
Okay.
I mean, it's a puppy that breathes fire.
Right.
I do not have a favorite Pokemon.
But if you had to,
I don't know.
How about a Snorlax? Randy?
Snorlax is pretty good.
Just go ahead and like. Okay, there we go. Randy's
Snorlax
favorite Pokemon is and always has been Snorlax.
We've always been at war with Snorlax. We've always been at storm with Snorlax.
An existence.
Did you just call in 1984
and Pokemon? Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. I didn't. All right, we did get some games in this week. Most notably, we've got Finspan, which is the newest Wingspan spinoff that is all fish related.
Yep. Yes, I think we were talking about this off mic the other day, and. I think we determined that like the age suggested age is like more like 10 and up instead of 14 and up, so that it may be a somewhat more family friendly one.
That's what I heard.
Well, fishing is universal, so I think that makes a little bit of sense.
But birding winging is also universal.
No, but I mean, there's an action like if you're birding, like a 10-year-old is going to get bored. They're not going to care about that.
10-year-olds don't want to fish unless they have to, unless that's the only way they can bond with their deadbeat dad.
Wow. Rogues Gallery Comics and Truth.
I'm working out some issues, people. And what's the other one? Oh, well, everybody understands bonding with their dragon, too.
I believe
it is that the gameplay is a little simpler for... It's 10 and up instead of 14 and up.
Right.
So, anyway...
So you're saying gameplay, not themes.
Not themes.
Okay.
Yes. Not themes. Fins, wings, worms, whatever you got, all are welcome. All
right.
Mammoth Span.
that's coming. That's forthcoming.
We got Azul Duel, which is another one of the two-player conversions of a very popular Tali game.
Yep.
So they've done what? Seven Wonders, Isle of Cats?
Seven Wonders, Isle of Cats, and Splendor.
Splendor. These are all, like...
They're all good games.
...widely loved.
Yep. Yeah, that's very cool.
Yep.
Yeah, I was impressed when you can take some sort of, like... some identifiable core mechanics of a game and sort of retool it for, you know, another sort of genre different player count or whatever, while usually still retaining something of the flavor of it. It's pretty impressive. I just randomly, once upon a time, I played a bit of the dice game of Settlers of Catan, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, this is wild. We each have our own little map. We're designing our own board and not playing on the same board, and yet it feels Settlers of Catan-ish.
Sure.
Yeah, pretty cool.
We got the Paranoia Uncooperative board game. This is the Paranoia RPG where...
It's a kind of famous, infamous cult 80s RPG.
Yep.
A darkly humorous future...
A computer runs this complex yep. that is staffed by clones. The clones are troubleshooters trying to root out traitors, but everyone is secretly a traitor in some secret society. And when you actually made like six characters because they're all clones of each other.
Yep.
And you would die, like playing the game, you would lose most of your characters.
You know what?
It's a darkly humorous thing.
I've never thought about this until this moment, but you know that Harlan Ellison's short story, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream?
Yep.
It's like the grim that's the grim version of
yes.
this. This is like, if it was all funny and dark,
yeah.
It would
the
be
Terry
the Paranoid.
Pratchett version.
Yes, yes yeah. absolutely.
It was probably
Terry
inspired
Pratchett's
by it.
I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream.
Of course, it's aged poorly because, as we all know, AI is our friend and is super good for everything.
Yeah, it has not caused any problems. No. There has not been any issues with it, not even any sense of danger to the intellect.
And definitely putting AI in charge of the government seems like a good idea.
Sure.
It's hard to be worse.
That is true. That is fair. I mean,
is that a monkey's paw?
Ed 209 can come in.
Be more subtle.
Ed 209 could get some work done.
He could get some work done. Yeah. Anyway, Through the Desert, a Reiner Knizia game where you're trying to sort of lose little plastic camels. You're trying to surround areas. I played this last year at.
They're like trains of their trails. I played this at some point, I think myself. And it's a really good game.
Has Reiner Knizia ever made a bad game?
Yes,
he's made a billion games.
I can actually identify one of his bad games.
Oh, what was one? I'm just curious.
His Lord of the Rings cooperative game he made. It was one of the first cooperative games. I think it might actually go back to the 90s. Actually, I know there have been other cooperative games. If you go back far enough, you can probably find one in the 70s. But it was like before pandemic and stuff. He is extremely difficult, unfun, because it's like, you know when you're like getting your ass kicked in pandemic or something, or one of those cooperative games.
It's still fun.
It's like that right from the beginning. And there's never the fun part where you're like, we might just be getting ahead, or we just accomplished something really cool. It's always like, the Nazgul only mauled us and didn't outright kill us. Yay. Terrible, terrible game. Okay. But, you know, years later, he would do a cooperative game with another license. He did a Star Trek cooperative game. The name's going to escape me, but that was actually quite good. Like, he had learned all the right lessons from it, you know?
We got a game called Message from the Stars that is it's kind of a party game. Basically, one person is like the alien interpreter or the alien sending out messages, and they have a message and they have to send it in like an alien language.
Yeah.
And the other players have to decipher it.
Oh, that sounds fun.
That actually sounds really cool.
It's kind of, it's a rival the board game.
Okay. That sounds infinitely more fun than the Arrival the movie.
We got a game based on a game called Connect 37. This game is called Switchbacks. I guess you place tiles number 1 to 37 in a hexagonal grid, and then you're placing a tile, putting chips, and you're trying to at the end have a group of tiles in consecutive numbers so you can trace a sequential path across it. This is the same thing, but it is a mountain trekking expedition themed.
Ooh, a mountain what?
Mountain trekking.
Not mountain drinking, which is what I heard.
Yeah. I don't know how you drink a mountain.
Well, I think you go on... I was assuming it was a go on the mountain to drink.
Oh, and I heard you're actually drinking mountains. I don't know how to do that.
No, that would be crazy. anyway, so mountain drinking is a new game. No, actually, what was the name of this game?
Switchbacks.
Switchbacks. Okay, no, that sounds cool.
We're breaking Randy today.
Yep, yep. I was just waiting for y'all to be done. Y'all were off on a tangent, and
sometimes,
I was not.
Oh,
was not
like
on
you,
board
have,
that
you
time.
Don't go on tangents.
I never go on tangents.
Sometimes I like to do a quick encore of whatever the stupid joke is.
Yeah. The last game is Onyx, O-N-I-X. It's a card collector where you're trying to collect different gems.
Okay.
Both of those are sort of smaller games.
Oh my God, what's the other gemstone game?
Splendor.
What does Splendor think about this?
I don't think Splendor has an opinion.
Splendor has the copyright on all gemstone games.
They're launching gems at them.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, let's talk about comics. Yep. This week, I think, is notable for at least for me and Nick. I think Dave did not have as much as
I found some good books, but like not as many as you guys.
It's a sizable.
I just have higher standards. So,
that's what it is. It's a sizable week, though.
It is a big week.
I had a big stack. And
for me, there were a lot of my favorites were in here. Justice League was in here. Yep. X-Men, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which
Absolute
launches
Wonder
their
Woman.
New Absolute
the second,
Wonder Woman.
Yeah, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles hits its second arc.
Fantastic Four, which is a really good One World Under Doom tie-in.
Yeah.
That is feels like maybe Ryan North knew Trump was going to win the election. Ultimate Spider-Man, and also the TVA, which I've been really enjoying.
Okay,
but there are some new books as well. There's a One World Under Doom tie-in called The Red Hulk, brings Red Hulk back in.
Obviously, Red Hulk has been in the news lately.
Yep,
it's true.
After the rampage he created in Washington.
Yes, he destroyed the White House.
That's right.
But this is that... There's a
neat premise to this, which is that Doom has created, like, a sort of prison compound for, like, kind of, like, tacticians and strategists to game out war games and theory and stuff like that his rule.
It has a good opening that I was, like... At first, I thought it was
like,
actually happening.
On?
I was like, what is going on?
Yeah, it's a good fake
but
out.
Then it, but then it kind of gets a fake out, and I was like, oh, that's...
But it was a cool fake out.
It was a good fake
like,
out.
Not like one of those weird disappointed.
Yep.
But yes, but General Ross, Thunderbolt Ross is... He wasn't president in the comics.
No.
Is there, and they have him actually... He cannot Red Hulk up. He so, like, one of his first things he's going to try and figure out is, like, well, you know, can I communicate with the other prisoners? Can I maybe find any way to sort of rally us? And can I find a way to Red Hulk up? Now, being that the book is called Red Hulk, you know, you might figure he's going to figure this out.
But this also features kind of an array of different characters.
Yep.
There's some cool other people in this prison. We can say probably who they are. It's not. It was like in the. I think it was in the.
We should leave it for people to read.
Okay. Yeah. But
there's
there are
a couple notable people.
Let's call them a little bit more on the cult side of Marvel's characters.
Yeah,
but kind of a few of them like are the kind of people who people might say are one of their cult favorites.
Yep. It's a fun book. It's got kind of a Great Escape vibe to it.
Yep. I agree, and I enjoyed it as well.
Yep. We've got the second in J. Michael Straczynski's really weird team-up one-shots.
Started with Rocket Raccoon and Dr. Doom.
Yeah. This time, art by Bernard Chang, and is Captain America and Volstagg.
Yep, Volstagg the Voluminous, Volstagg the Lion of Asgard,
yep.
Volstagg the Big Man.
And Cap gets to play his sidekick.
Yes.
it's a fun one. It's a weird one, but it's a fun one.
You know, he writes all of these kind of like plays. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of talking in them, but it's all pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah. JMS has an interesting take on these characters.
You're gonna find out something about Volstagg you didn't know.
You will. There's a Women of Marvel She-Devils one-shot, which has...
An anthology, right?
Yeah.
I believe it was meant to focus on sort of Marvel street-level characters, but, like, that includes, like, Shanna the She-Devil, hence the title of it.
Yep. There's a Shanna the She-Devil. There's a Laura Kinney Wolverine, or X-23, I guess, is what she is now. And, Is that it? Is there just those two? No, there's three stories. I don't know who the other person is, because I didn't look through the whole thing. But anyway.
Let's say Hellcat.
Sure, why not? Yeah, could be her. there is a new Godzilla miniseries, an anthology miniseries called Godzilla vs. America. First issue is Godzilla vs. Chicago. Four stories of Godzilla attacking Chicago. The first one, I didn't know it was going to be an anthology, and it's about a dude who's like the fan man, one of these guys who like rides a parachute with a fan powering him.
Oh, yeah,
who, like, accidentally ruined a sports performance in Chicago and now is hated, and decides he's going to redeem himself using a Mechagodzilla, and it's pretty funny. It's wild.
So I'm going to guess this is a wide array of tones to these stories.
I think they're all a little comedic,
but
actually.
All focusing on kind of the, whatever, the identity of the city or its weirdness.
Yep. IWSA one-shot Section 31 Emperor Born, which ties into the Section 31 movie.
Yep, just straight up prequel kind of thing.
There is a new book from Jimmy Palmiotti and Dave Johnson called Pop Kill, which has a pug on it and spy stuff.
Yep,
indeed, sir.
And nudity.
Yep.
There's
Street Fighter Prime, New Street Fighter book. Did you get a chance to read this?
I didn't. I flipped through it. Yeah. I saw that Zangief is wearing pants, and I was a little dismayed.
Zangief's wearing
pants?
I
was saying that in this day and age, Nick, you have to allow that these characters would have multiple skins for any given game.
Nope, he cannot.
And one of them probably allows them to cover up his nasty Russian bulge.
You must see the thunderous thighs.
No!
And Guile should not have facial hair, sorry.
You know, Gal can have facial hair so he can shave it off in a heroic montage.
And I was telling that when he removes his hideous beard and shows that he's a true American.
Yes. not a bearded freak.
Not a bearded freak like Randy.
Yes. Yeah.
I was telling Nick, I was like that you have to accept that the there's always going to be beard skins now.
Yeah.
Which is a weird fate word to say.
Beard skins.
You know, Marvel Rivals has a bearded Reed Richards.
Dave, are the beard skins in the new D&D Player's Handbook?
they are. They're the arch enemy of red caps.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They get a +2 on dexterity and a -2 on wisdom.
Yeah, and if you get surrounded by beard skins. I don't know. I got nothing. But yes, I'm going to read this because it's later on though, because, although I always sucked at Street Fighter, I kind of like its goofy lore.
Sure. Yeah, same. The goofiness is a big draw.
Other single issues for me, beyond the ones we mentioned, Detective Comics 1094, kind of really digging Tom Taylor's, and Mikkel Janin's Detective Comics. Took me a little while to get into it, but
saying that there's an interesting story where Damien is sent to infiltrate kind of like a...
he's going sort of inside of a youth prison that's corrupt, and it's good. It's a really good story.
Yeah, it sounded like some interesting stuff with
that. Batman is always sending children into youth prisons.
And they're probably safer than they are on a mission against the Joker.
Probably true. And then the second issue of Rogue Savage Land is out this week as well.
Okay.
Nick, so you have Seasons?
Yeah, Seasons number 2, Rick Remender, and the sensational artist Paul Azaceta.
His very different Rick Remender type book.
Yeah, this
the
is...
The four Season Sisters.
Yep, Season Sisters. This is where we're introduced to the other three sisters in kind of a weird... I don't know, this is blending a lot of genres of stuff to create kind of a tone that I haven't seen Remender use. I think that's what's kind of intriguing me the most, is uncovering a different layer of Remender.
It is a sort of pop adventurousness, but kind of, it actually feels like a sort of British kind of adventurousness.
Yeah, it feels a little Doctor Who manic.
Yes.
And I'm down with that.
It's very twee.
It's very twee. Also, the third issue of Green Lantern Dark, which I thought was an exceptional third issue. I'm really enjoying this series. Black Canary number 4, Tom King continues this weird battle between Shiva and Black Canary.
Multi-issue fight scene with flashbacks.
Sure.
Yep. I have not read it yet, but I've been really enjoying Hellhunters, the kind of World War II era versus weird demons.
Yep. That's Marvel heroes in
Marvel
specifically.
Heroes. So like Cap, Bucky, a Doctor Strange-esque character.
And World War II Ghost Rider.
It's
the only one people care about.
Speaking of Ghost Rider, we also have the third issue of Helverine.
Yep.
Then I'm really digging Joshua Williamson's Superman right now. I think since that Lois Lane special, I've kind of been on the book, and I've been really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And is it Jorge Jimenez? Or no, this is actually Dan Mora as well. His art has been spectacular in this series. Dan Mora is all over the place. And
the people ask for Mora.
That's true. And I think that's all the ones. I will reiterate that I thought Absolute Wonder Woman this week was exceptional.
It's the conclusion to the first arc. It's the fifth issue. It's the sort of final showdown, which... I think we would all agree, none of us were thinking that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, it was great.
There's a lot of cool stuff in it. It's one of the cool things that they are doing in this, in the Absolutes, and to be fair, I think also over in Marvel's Ultimate line it's a pretty interesting kind of unpredictability.
Yeah.
It's kind of like one of the things that, you know, I think we're going to maybe talk about the second half of the season of Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, which we all liked. And that has like a really fascinating unpredictability to it.
we mentioned a lot.
They're making good decisions.
You mentioned a lot. Did you mention X-Men?
I did.
Okay. Again, I'll read it.
Yeah, you can read it. All I said was that they all came out. If you guys want to talk about them a little bit.
Yeah, we should mention one or two of these.
Yeah. We're all on board X-Men. Jed McKay's
X-Men, I think, is one of the most crowd-pleasing comics that is on the stands right now.
I think we all were a little uncertain about it at first.
Yeah, I was. And
it took a few issues to kind of get me on board.
It felt like a weird homage to Morrison's X-Men.
Yeah.
And it's slowly becoming something more.
Agree.
Even though, what was it, the third or fourth issue, which is actually a direct homage to the psychic thing that
But he's drawing on, like, he's not only acknowledging stuff from the Krakoa era, but, like, going back to kind of my generation of X-Men in the 80s, including in this issue, which at the very tail end of last issue, there was a cliffhanger that revealed Alpha Flight was going to intercede. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were aliens that were chasing after Corsair, Cyclops' dad, yep. A space pirate kind of guy, and Deadbeat Dad.
Yep. I try to forget that part.
It's hard to move past these things. So this issue has the X-Men trying to deal with that with some help from, because I guess it's, was it, did it crash land or it was over Canadian airspace? Or
yeah, Canadian airspace.
Yeah, that's right, because their base itself is, like, near to Alaska.
Yep.
So, you're going to get to see Puck and Guardian and Snowbird and you know, like, other members of Alpha Flight.
But not Shaman, because he's a conscientious objector.
He's a conscientious objector. It straight up follows the two-issue miniseries.
Five issues. Yeah,
okay.
It was five.
That kind of near the tail end of the Krakoa era when they were wrapping things up and mutants were, like, being rounded up for camps. And it looked like at first the Alpha Flight was helping do that, but it turned out that they were, like, secretly, you know,
doing the right thing.
Yeah, they were basically, you know, kind of a, like an underground railroad for kind of mutants. And now they have been, you know, facing legal problems. they're like imprisoned, but kind of going on missions. They're earning their sort of freedom. They decided to, it seems like, accept their punishment,
yep.
And within reason.
Yeah.
They're pretty well written. Like, most of these characters, you know, basically they feel right to me. And I've been reading the Alpha Flight since issue number one of that way back in 82 or whatever it was.
Yeah. And McKay continues to write one of the best Magics and best Scott Summers that we've
seen. Yeah, Cyclops is finally getting his due.
Magic as kind of a little bit of a bro.
Is
more fun than she's ever been before. She kind of hangs with Juggernaut. She'd be listening to metal music and looking for, like, what's the most Chaos Goblin thing I can do in a given moment.
Yep.
And I've never thought I'd ever say it, but a writer has made me care about Quentin Quire.
Let's not say
I do. I think as he is written here, which is kind of the lovable imp. But also everybody, he's got the kick me sign on his back.
I will say that Rainey and I will allow it. I think we're going to allow the presence, but we would like expel him.
We do not grant him the rank of X-Man.
No, we do not. We do not. And in fact, we will expel him at the first possible opportunity.
We acknowledge that he is in the book, but we do not grant him the rank of X-Man.
I wanted to mention, reiterate, Ninja Turtles 7 is the start of the second arc.
New artist?
New artist who's great.
Yeah, Juan Ferreira.
It's super good.
He's talented.
I forget what Juan Ferreira's done, but he's a great artist.
He reminded me of, who is it, Freddie Williamson?
Yep.
But I think he's
Freddie
better.
Williams.
Freddie Williams, who did the kind of painted art on some of those, like, Batman Ninja Turtle crossovers.
Agreed.
And some of that, some licensed stuff. But basically, you know, the brothers have been reunited, but they are by no means a family again.
They're at odds with each other.
And in fact, what they found is that this city is, like, kind of really braced for them. This skeevy-ass mayor who has, like, is, like, actually allowing, like, the Foot Clan to serve as, like, deputized officers and stuff, so that they're, like, on the rooftops everywhere.
Oh, yeah, they're that, but they're also, like, the firefighters and the...
Right.
They're so kind of ingrained in such a way that...
If the turtles fight against them, they look like they're fighting, you know, the good people of the city.
Why would this have any correlations to anything that we're doing
nowadays? I don't know.
I have no idea.
And these turtles are stupidly fighting amongst themselves instead of... But you know what? Although it is angsty in that sense, there is both some dark humor to be had, especially with Donatello, who is carrying around a dead rat that he insists is Master Splinter.
Yep.
And then, but then here's the kind of interesting thing that keeps it from being too dark, which is that Donatello is actually saying some wise things.
Yeah.
And there's some interesting mysteries unfolding kind of related to it. I love the scene with April O'Neil in this. It was so good.
There's a very small scene with Raphael and Casey Jones.
Yes.
And I thought it was particularly good. It's also just interesting to see Jason Aaron writing so many books and utilizing different aspects. Like, he's not one note.
He's particularly cultivated a sort of chameleon-like ability there. Anyway, though, I think that's all the stuff that I was going to mention.
The only thing I want to say is about Detective Comics, which I mentioned a little bit, is that I've been a little wary on this one. It took me a few issues to get in, but now I'm sort of all on board.
And it's got, like, that really good art from Mikkel Janin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also want to say Ultimate Spider-Man had a big surprise this week.
Oh, yeah.
For people complaining at kind of the pacing of that Hickman is doing...
Nick means me. Me. Yeah,
and when he says people, like, he means me. No, but I think it's a valid criticism of the book. It is not, like, the... but... Hickman does good surprises, and I think this there are several.
I did not see that one coming.
There are several things in here, and a particular conversation on a rooftop that I thought was very interesting and fun and entertaining, but also really well written.
Yep,
I thought it was a very good issue.
Also, I was kind of surprised by their use of their Swamp Thing stuff in Justice League. I thought was interesting, and as mentioned, I think. Fantastic Four, I thought, was a fantastic, maybe the best tie into One World Under Doom so far.
Yeah.
Not surprising, it's Ryan North who's writing the main book.
But it is also a kind of a smaller issue when it's just Ben Grimm, Susan Storm, and Jen Walters going out to lunch.
Yeah.
In New York.
Yep.
And things kind of spiral. But they do. It was very good.
Very good. All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to talk about, we got a whole bunch of trailers and news and stuff to talk about. So we got a bunch of news to talk about because there was the Comics Pro meeting and a lot of comic stuff got put out, as well as we got some trailers and stuff to talk about. So let's jump in. Let's start with, there's a new Captain America coming from Chip Zdarsky and Valerio Schiti.
Yep.
Which is, I did not realize, apparently the first story arc is going to be set in a period right after Cap came out of the ice.
Yep.
Before he officially joined the Avengers, by the way, is not that they never happened. He came out of the ice and joined the Avengers immediately.
Correct.
So this is a new, like,
this is a new kind of,
it's a continuity insert.
Yep.
But basically, Captain America and his new Howling Commandos are tasked with infiltrating Latveria after Doctor Doom has just recently taken it over.
Assuming a sliding time scale, this would basically just be set in the early days of the Avengers, so like 10 or 15 years or whatever in the past of the current Marvel Universe.
Who knows?
I assume it'll be something like that, unless they overtly make it a period piece and put it in, like, the 60s when it was originally
going to have set. No, I think it's going to be kind of... I'm looking at the designs for the new Commandos. They look very modern, so I think it is probably going to be a sort of, like, fuzzy timeline thing, but...
The art looked cool to me because, it, in the one promo piece I saw, it reminded me of Steve Epting when Ed Brubaker was doing Captain America, which was one of the great runs that created the Winter Soldier and all that.
Well, and Cap has, like, a stealth uniform. This is going to be very militarized, Cap.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's in there,
cool
too.
Looking.
I gotta say, I wanted a flat... I wanted a modern-day Cap. I wanted Zdarsky to be doing, like, the modern-day Cap. So, like, this continuity implant thing I'm not as interested in. But I'm sure it'll be interesting.
Well you know, to some degree, Cap is so intertwined with the fate of America, and boy, does that feel like it's up in the air right now.
But that's why I wanted him to do it.
But you can't have him go and solve the problem, and he looks weak if he doesn't go and solve the problem.
That's
so
true.
I think there's a certain degree... You give a little bit of distance.
Yeah.
And I bet that might have been why they did it.
Maybe so.
We only know that this is, like, the first story arc.
Yeah.
Who knows that... I mean, Zdarsky is usually on board a book. He's one of the few writers who stays on board a book for a while.
That is fair. That is fair.
And I would imagine they will do... This is like a flashback, and then they'll go back to some sort of current timeline.
Right, right. It'll be Cap fighting in the post-apocalyptic America that we know.
I think I'm more interested in this. I'm definitely more interested in what's going on in Cap right now.
Yeah.
JMS, I felt like, has done some very bizarre things. Yeah, I wasn't things.
Crazy. JMS has weird tastes. He does. Very clear, yeah. Speaking of going back, Mark Waid, along with artist Skylar Petridge, is doing a... is this going to be... This is going to be an action... It's an Action Comics story.
Yeah, basically Action Comics is...
It's going to be doing...
In a way, doing the same thing.
They're doing the story of Superboy, like, when he is 15-year-old and just learning to get his powers.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, I don't know that I'm interested in this particular era, but some people are.
I thought it sounded interesting. It definitely differentiates Action Comics from Superman. In a way.
I'm trying to remember, was he Superboy in the current continuity, or was he just like he had his powers and he maybe did super-ish things?
I don't know.
Like in Mark Waid's brain, this is what it always has been. Yeah. So
right. But there's a yes or a no question. Like, is he going to put on a costume or not?
I assume he will.
You think? I don't think current.
Don't they show him in a costume? The promo.
I don't know if they did. Yeah.
Because they always in the modern times, like since 86 or whatever, have made out that basically Clark becomes
Superman.
Yeah. Yeah. What was I going to say? That sounds interesting to me. When I was a kid, I got this miniseries that was like just before kind of Crisis on Infinite Earths hit.
Yep.
So this was still the tail end of the original DC universe. It was called like Superman the Hidden Years.
Yep.
And it showed like, it was a 4-issue miniseries that showed like, I guess kind of like the college years for Clark when he had been Superboy, and he kind of runs up against some things that are a little bit more difficult for him, like a college buddy who goes out drinking and driving and ends up losing use of his legs from a crash, and like some sort of serious things that affect him. And in the end, he kind of grows up a bit and he's like, okay, I'm going to be Superman now.
Yeah. Just a young version.
Okay, so this looks like a continuity insert. Yeah, Nick is showing me a picture that shows him wearing the costume. Interesting, by the way, looking a little bit like what's his name on Smallville.
Yeah, Tom Welling.
Tom Welling. Yeah. That makes sense.
Some
really good design work for like the Kents and just good art. I mean,
well, they're calling this the Summer of Superman because they know the Superman movie is coming. They're going to try and do.
Yep.
Among that, they're also doing a Supergirl series written and drawn by Sophie Campbell.
Right.
Which I'm very interested in.
Artist and writer that we followed for a while. Sophie Campbell did the TMNT kind of new direction, and when they hit issue 100, where it was the kind of mutant town thing, where you know there was like a borough of Manhattan or whatever that was like blocked off, where everybody had gotten like mutated into some animal, and it was a really good run. It like she drew it and wrote these interesting stories, and it I think she was on that book for like 4-year history.
First story arc and then wrote everything else. I'm excited for this one.
This one, so a couple of interesting things. One,
it is a miniseries.
It's ongoing.
Okay.
It's a miniseries, but it's an ongoing.
Okay.
Kara Zor-El is going to be going back to her roots in the town of Midvale. She gets there, and there's already another Supergirl there protecting the town. She's going to be finding out who the imposter is, so that's interesting. The other thing is the costume design has a new design by Stanley Art Germ Lau.
Yeah. Okay.
And he went back to sort of the midriff bearing thing. It's a little cheesecakey, and I kind of wish it hadn't.
What's funny is Sophie Campbell is not usually that person.
Yeah, and so I'm kind of surprised by it.
Yeah.
It's fine. But I'm like, I don't like the midriff-bearing Supergirl costume. That is a Michael Turner throwback. I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
Well, but it was also sort of what the animated series did.
Right.
And that was kind of a big thing for a lot of people.
I didn't like the animated series.
Unless you are doing they've done this before, the somewhat provocative discovering her sexuality Supergirl, which, like, it's kind of gross because so many of those writer-artists are dudes.
Yep.
I will allow Sophie Campbell is probably going to have a better perspective on this. So I don't actually think that's going to happen, but like you, Randy, my gut instinct is, wish not.
Yeah.
Could they? You know, might it be quite good? Yeah,
I'm sure it'll be good. Sophie Campbell's a great writer and artist, so
I think it's a good design, and a lot of variant covers they have of various artists.
They're all cheesecakey.
I don't think the Bilquis Evely is super cheesecakey.
I don't know. The bare midriff thing is just not a thing I'm a fan of. But that said, I am still very excited about this because I think that she's a great writer. an artist.
I'm glad she's getting this chance.
Oh, yeah.
Like a Supergirl.
Crypto will be getting his own miniseries from Ryan North and Mike Norton. Mike Norton did... He's done a series of... He did Battle Pug. He did all those pug-themed prints and stuff. He likes drawing dogs.
But this is Ryan North of Fantastic Four and Squirrel Girl previously. But the big thing is the... what is it? One World Under Doom or whatever? Is that what the
current thing is called? Yeah, that's what he's currently
writing, yeah. So obviously the right person to write a Crypto series. Okay, yeah, this is more, in his Squirrel Girl mode.
So each issue is a complete short story telling the full story of Crypto the Superdog from Krypton all the way to Earth. It says here, he's a very good dog.
Oh, good. It's
a heartfelt and moving view of humanity, good and bad, through the empathic eyes of the ultimate outsider.
Good and bad. Somebody's going to be mean to Crypto. I don't like it.
And then also worth noting that they are making Crypto shorts. For
I thought you meant like clothing,
not clothing.
No,
like,
but they're
short
be
movies.
Yeah, they're gonna be
short films following up his DC debut. A series of short films they're gonna release. Gunn says he's a terrible, terrible dog. It's for families and it's just really fun and goofy. It's pretty cool.
Our understanding is that this will be live action, but like Crypto will probably be the way he looks in the Superman
movie.
That's
my guess. Yeah,
which is to say, highly realistic CG that could kind of pass for real.
But it wouldn't shock me if he got some like one-off characters like Guy Gardner and Crypto. some of the people that
would
like
be really fun.
This is kind of fun. I don't know that I like this. I don't like this anti-dog propaganda. But Gunn said that of Crypto's role, Crypto is inspired by their dog Ozu, who he adopted shortly after starting Superman. You guys know about this?
No.
I think I did hear about this.
Yeah. Ozu, who came from a hoarding situation in a backyard with 60 other dogs and never knew human beings, was problematic to say the least. He immediately came in and destroyed our home, our shoes, our furniture. He even ate my laptop. It took a long time before it even let us touch him. And I remember thinking, gosh, how difficult would life be if Ozu had superpowers?
I mean, sure.
So Gunn is working out his dog trauma, but he does clearly love... He says, by the way, Ozu today is fairly often a very good boy. this sounds fun. Yeah. I'm excited about
this. Yeah, I think those would be cool.
Yeah. Another bit of...
And by the way, so very different from the Superman who, in his first film from Snyder, broke a neck.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just the polar opposite.
And his dad is like, maybe you should let that bus full of kids drown.
Yep. And then he's like, I gotta go catch an appointment with a tornado.
Whee! Exactly what happened. No one can convince me otherwise.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
No need to go back and watch it.
It was the Twister from Twister.
It's still on the loose out there somewhere.
Y'all, I don't want to be controversial or anything, but Zack Snyder sucks.
There we go.
I don't think you're going to get any
in this particular room amongst our audiences.
Come at me, Snyder Bros. All right. There's a couple new animated series just got announced. My Adventure with Green Lantern, which is the same executive producer as My Adventure with Superman, which we all really enjoy.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
This is going to follow high school student Jessica Cruz, who gets a Green Lantern power ring. And then more debris from the Lantern space war arrives, including their alien foes. So that is going to be the vibe of it.
But so is it going to be like My Adventures with Superman?
So it's set in the same world.
Oh,
so same sort of anime style?
Yeah they're,
dude, I'd watch that.
The guys are trying to bring over as many of the art production team as they can to the same.
This sounds fun.
Jessica Cruz in the comics was a good concept, which was like introvert kind of person giving... Actually, like anxiety-riddled, I think.
Yep.
Person given the Green Lantern powers. But I really have rarely seen it really her really well done.
She's the one who's kind of like the...
She's the coordinator of the current Green Lantern,
which I think is an interesting place.
Which is a cool idea. I thought like there's ideas around her, but I think these animators like they tend to be really good at kind of getting to the heart of the character, and we already know that like this team has done some great work with my Avengers.
I'm super excited for this one.
So this sounds like a good idea. I always want more Green Lantern stuff.
There's also DC Superpowers, which is going to be the Alliance School for Heroes, focused on Lightning, Flash, Plastic Man, Aqua Girl, Green Lantern, and Terra. Who level up their powers under the supervision of Principal Martian Manhunter.
Who level up their powers what?
Under the supervision of Principal Martian Manhunter.
That sounds fun.
That sounds fun.
I thought the next one I think is interesting.
And then Starfire is getting a series.
Huh.
It's the origin of her. She is she's using her ancient spaceship to escape her planet Tamaran.
Yeah.
Along the way she meets Space Biker Crush, plant-loving Fern and the magical princess Amethyst of Gemworld. And together they will uncover the deepest reaches of the DC Universe, save space dolphins, surf technical and nebulas, and boldly soar into the unknown.
And Jesse Kimball is executive producing.
Sorry, is this one live-action cartoon? What is
cartoon.
It?
These cartoon.
These are all animations.
That sounds cool.
Space dolphins.
Yeah,
I assume that links to Crush and Lobo and all that stuff.
Sure. Yeah. In super weird news, James Watkins, I don't know who this is going to be directing Clayface from a script by Mike Flanagan. I don't understand why this is being done.
So it's weird, and I can only, like, I feel like at some point Mike Flanagan, who we all like a lot, is a great horror guy.
Yep.
Again, reminder, he did Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor.
Yep.
He did, what's the one with the vampires?
Midnight Mass.
Midnight Mass. Bunch of other good stuff. Some good movies, too. He must have at some point been like, I wonder, you know, like maybe just idly musing about Clayface. Could I do a story with him? He must have come up with something he really liked.
Yeah.
Because he's been like, he was very serious about getting it made. And it looks like it's happening now.
Yep.
And it is weird, like, because, like, there's been no modern DCU Batman. We know, and I guess this is a related story.
Yeah.
That James Gunn has said that the Robert Pattinson Batman, I think we kind of knew this, but
yeah.
Is not going to be the DCU Batman.
Right. Yep.
That's kind of, you know, off just as much as Joker is its own thing, that's its own Batman world. And that's fine. Batman can often operate kind of Gotham and just, that's his own thing.
Yeah.
But... Yes, Clayface as horror before you've really established Batman and stuff seems strange.
It's weird. Yep.
But because of the Mike Flanagan pedigree, I'm like, it's probably going to be pretty good.
Yep. However, we knew he was never going to direct. He's involved in way too much right now.
Right, he's doing Stephen King adaptations and a bunch of other stuff.
He's doing Dark Tower for Amazon or whatever.
Right, yeah. I don't have any particular interest in this, but I'll probably give it a shot. I'm curious to see what it looks like.
Yeah.
I like Mike Flanagan. Yeah.
I think I need to see, like, a trailer or some sort of
hint. Some indication of what they're doing, yeah.
Because Clayface as a movie is not as, like, sexy as I wanted it.
Already back in the 90s when they, Batman the Animated Series, you know, in the early 90s, did a good rethink of Clayface. Like, to this day, like, that's the version I think of. The monster version of him looks great. They did make it tragic. Matt Hagen was not like a horrible monster, but when he does become a monster, pretty horrible.
Yeah,
he's like creepy body horror-ish, T-1000, smother you inside his own body kind of freako.
Yeah.
Stark. Here's the challenge here. What he is doing, and since there, I don't particularly think that there's going to be a big role for Batman in this, is kind of like the Sony, Spider-Man stuff, right? Was it Sony or no?
No, it is. Sony was trying to do all
all the Spidey villains.
Yeah.
Like, can he kind of do what they didn't? Which is to make a good villain story that kind of stands alone, even if you don't really...
I mean,
venture into the Batman universe.
I would put money on that Flanagan could come up with something that would work.
I think
so, as opposed to what
too.
The Sony products and
but
Craven...
But also, to some degree, I'm like, well, I want Clayface to be in the Batman universe. I'm like, otherwise, you might as well just do a new monster story about a guy with weird transformation powers.
That may be essentially what it is.
And maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Last bit of live-action news. Punisher is getting a special after he reappears in Daredevil Born Again.
Okay.
Marvel special presentation.
Yes, one of these just like Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday and Werewolf by Night.
What holiday should Punisher celebrate?
Arbor Day.
Arbor Day. That's what you said in our thing.
Yes. he is being co-written by Jon Bernthal and directed and co-written by Ronaldo Marcus Green, who did We Own This City.
Oh,
is that familiar?
That rings a bell.
I'm trying to think if I don't think I know this. So it was a drama miniseries. Oh, yeah, I know this. It's a thing in the... It's a...
Oh, that's the one based off of the book that...
It's a David Simon.
David Simon book, yeah. That was really, really terrifying and good.
Well, I mean, seems like the good guy to be making Punisher.
That's true.
And Jon Bernthal was in that, which is probably how the two of them became friends.
He was phenomenal in it.
And real quick to mention, for those who are new watching Reacher, they are going to be doing a spinoff of Francis Neely, who is sort of his investigator, partner, friend.
She showed up in both of the series. She
showed up in both series. And the new one as well. She's a great character. I like her a lot. And I kind of like the Reacher universe. So.
Yeah, I do too.
But she's not a giant mountain.
She's not a giant mountain.
She's definitely as deadly, though.
Okay.
All right. Trailers.
Do we skip the one bit of the big crossover?
Oh, yeah, we skipped the big news. I was going to save it.
I almost forgot it. I was making sure.
Yeah, you're right.
This is something we're talking about, at least for a few minutes.
So, yes, they have announced that Marvel and DC are going to do a crossover at the end of this year.
Comic crossover.
That is crazy.
That is good.
It's fantastic.
When was the last time they did one?
It's been a long time.
Was it 90? JLA Avengers in the early 2000s, I believe? Because that was in the early 2000s, wasn't it? Or was it?
I don't remember. I feel like it was.
Maybe so?
Like, it took a while to get made. They'd been messing with it since the 80s, but it didn't happen until the 2000s. I think that's what the deal was. Because I remember...
It was in 2003.
Yeah, that's how
March 2000
sounds right to me. So, about two decades ago was the last time they were buddies, as far as I can remember.
Now, is that because of just the people at the top of Marvel and DC hated each other?
Hated each other, yes.
And also, like, to some degree, I understand how, because the movies and merchandising and video games and all that stuff have, they bring in so much more money than comics, you kind of don't want to do something that's going to promote the competition. You're always hoping that they're going to die off. Now, neither of these guys are going to get their wish. Marvel is not going to die off. DC's not going to die off.
But now what? We've got...
So better to, I think, embrace it and, in the spirit of their heroes and old Stan Lee stuff, enjoy the distinguished competition and so forth. Take some little pot shots at each other. Have some fun with it. Yep. But in the end, be the hero guys. And that's all we know.
Now, we know nothing about this. They've only said that they're doing
it. They're doing it. My hope is that we'll get more Amalgam.
I want something different.
I want Amalgam. I want them to do a DC and Marvel series of one-shots or whatever, have an Amalgam universe, and I need...
I don't get your love for it, Randy.
I know you guys don't get it. I love the Amalgam stuff.
I have a fondness for it, but we've seen it. I would like them to do something a little bit different. I'd like to see just regular crossovers with interesting stories. If you don't do a Harley Quinn Deadpool, what are you doing? There's just some...
I don't have a strong sense of what I do want from this. I guess I'm pretty open to whatever it is they end up doing. But I hope they kind of put some really good, you know, like Tom Taylor. He'd be a good guy to put on it. That guy seems to respect all the folks involved.
Yeah. He can play with both toys.
Yep. But maybe that'll be a fun one to speculate on as we get closer to it or...
Yeah, we really don't know anything. I'm excited they're doing it.
Yeah, I'm too.
I think this is a great idea, and I think it's time. All right, now we can do trailers.
Yes.
Freaky Tales. This is a new one from the writers, directors of Captain Marvel.
Right.
And it is an 80s. It says it's an 80s genre anthology mashup kind of thing.
Yeah, they use the visual metaphor of somebody with a mixtape at the very beginning for the, I think, all of the stuff in it. It's got Pedro Pascal, and he's what?
He's an enforcer who's like hired to steal from a.
They're supposed to. It's like an NBA
basketball player, the Warriors, I think.
Yeah, it's a basketball player, something from his house.
The write up is actually fairly concise and fun.
Okay, good.
Let's get it. An NBA star, a corrupt cop, a female rap duo, teenage punks, neo Nazis, and a debt collector embark on a collision course in 1987, Oakland, California.
Okay. I definitely got sort of Go and Pulp Fiction vibes out of this.
Yeah.
Right. It looked like it was probably going to be structurally kind of wild, like those two movies, possibly being told, you know, the same story, like an ultimate crazy, like, Rashomon thing.
Yeah.
Instead of the famous Kurosawa thing where three different people tell the story, it looks like it's going to be like 15 different people will reveal what happened through all their different stories. It's a good kind of poppy... violent but darkly funny trailer.
Yep.
Pascal looks like he's having fun.
Yep.
Some good lines in it.
He never doesn't look like he's having fun.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. I feel like he may be the coolest dude around. Like he's Keanu 2.0.
Looking forward to that. We got the trailer for speaking of kind of looking fun, The Residence, which is Shonda Rhimes' new, basically Knives Out in the White House.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is it? But I couldn't quite tell. Does this like all take place in one night or just like?
No, I don't think so. I think it seems like there's got to be.
But it looks like they've closed down the White House kind of like crime scene.
Right. So there's a murder.
Uzo Adobo is playing the.
The lead investigator,
and she's great.
She was from Orange is the New Black.
Yeah,
she is fantastic.
Yeah, I'd like to say it feels like a Clue or Knives Out in the White House with, you know, no doubt political backstabbing and there's like, what does it say, like 150 suspects for the night or something like that.
Yep.
It says, Cordelia Cupp, an eccentric detective, arrives at the White House in order to solve a murder which happened during a state dinner.
Yeah.
So I guess it does happen on kind of a one night kind of thing.
Well, it happens, but I don't know if all the investigation is on one night. So, but anyway, the trailer's a blast.
It is.
It's got some good people in it, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I was not super excited about this until I saw the trailer, and now I'm really excited for it. Got the trailer for Clown in the Cornfield, which is based on a book that we know our staffer Serena really liked.
Yep.
It is a murderous clown.
Ridiculous name.
Yep.
What is he? Friendo the Clown. And he is, what, the mascot for
a corn syrup company.
Yeah.
High fructose corn syrup company.
Yep.
who's the director, Nick? It was somebody you and I were like, this...
Eli Craig.
Tucker and Dale versus Evil,
which is a lot of fun.
It is. That, I think, is an underseen horror comedy from the past couple of years.
Yep.
You know what? Once upon a time, I watched half of that movie at a friend's place, and then I forget. There was like some like emergency or something, and I had to go in the middle of it. I never finished watching it.
Oh.
It was good. What
you
I saw
watch
was good.
The rest of it.
I think we might have hit that level of crazy killer clowns in television and movies, but I don't know. This is a good trailer.
This was a good trailer, I thought.
I thought it was okay. I'm going to leave this to probably other voices. But I'll have fun with that.
Then we got a trailer for Bring Her Back, which is from the people that did
Talk to Me.
Talk to Me,
which was a cult Australian horror movie that we all saw last year.
And if you can decipher what this movie is about, please tell me, because it is just bizarre.
It looks like maybe somebody's daughter died and they're going to try to bring her back.
There's a lot of eerie imagery and like stuff. There's no way you could decipher it just from the snippets you see in the trailer, but it's creepy.
Yeah, it's a weird A24 trailer.
It's unnerving looking.
I really like Talk to Me, and therefore I'm interested in this.
Yeah, same thing here.
And you hyped Talk to Me up too much, and I ended up not caring for it.
I don't think that was the case.
Sorry, you watched it wrong.
Nick went in with a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was like, sure. I'm going to knock these guys down a peg.
He's like, Talk to Me. More like, Crap to Me.
He's true. Like, I didn't know this was going to be Australian shit.
That's exactly what I said while I finished watching it.
I think you said, like, I'd rather go watch Crocodile Dundee 2.
Yeah, which is way more Australian horror than Talk to Me.
No, I'd rather watch Crocodile Dundee 3, which is Croc Goes to Hollywood or whatever.
I think you just say it's Australian.
Crocodile Dundee 3, Croc of Shit.
And then finally, we have the Andor season 2 trailer.
Yes, I think Nick and I, you and I, were both huge into Andor, and I would easily say it was like my favorite show of the year, which was like
to
now
hours
like,
upon hours of podcasts. Dissecting it,
all these post retrospective stuff.
Dave loved Andor like I love the MCU.
Was that 2022 or 2023?
That's 2022.
Okay, so it's been a bit.
I think. Now that you say that, now I'm not positive.
I think it's just been a year. I don't think it's been 2 years.
Maybe it was 2023. You're right.
But anyway,
it was not last year.
It's been a little bit.
It was an experience any other Star Wars that we've seen.
It was a thing that I didn't think you could do with Star Wars, which was to do kind of a serious, sophisticated thing, and to take the to kind of get away from the destined heroes thing towards a sort of realistic perspective on. Fighting a revolution, fighting fascism, with a lead character who actually did not even really particularly want to be there. He was a guy who mainly wanted to duck out on the war.
He basically wanted to find a cozy little spot and relax and chill, or maybe find a sister.
This was not at all what I wanted from Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I still think Skeleton Crew is closer to what I wanted from Star Wars.
A little baby show.
But
a very good baby show.
I love Skeleton Crew.
A fair amount of time. I did wind up liking the ending. I was not as on board as y'all. Y'all or everyone else in my life who clearly loved Andor. Like it was I was the crazy one for not liking it.
I have to ask though, do you normally like Tony Gilroy?
No. I do not.
And I think that's kind of where...
Well, so I haven't seen anything from him except, like, one movie.
I mean, but Michael Clayton is a good, like, really barometer, like, and I know you like Michael Clayton. Yeah. He did, like, a lot of writing for the Bourne movies, yeah. And he is an accomplished writer that definitely brings his own style.
At any rate, I was not as big on board. I did come around. I thought the last episode was really good. But for some reason, the notion of a rebellion against fascism show that shows the difficulties of it seems to hit me a little different right now.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say this. Lucas kind of... Star Wars, in some ways, has only ever been one thing.
Yeah.
A warning about that fascism, about fascism.
Yeah.
And the even the stuff, you know, I know this, like, the reason that, like, the sequel trilogy and stuff like that, where, like, they built another bigger kind of Death Star.
Yeah, yeah.
This happens a lot in Star Wars, but when you kind of start to see the patterns of history,
yeah.
I don't want to let these writers off the hook, because they also wrote some dumb movies and stuff like that. Yeah.
They're not wrong about
that. But they're not wrong about the way that works.
Yeah.
That there is, like, a new, dumb, bigger Death Star every, like, 40 years.
It's not like fascists are smart.
No, but they're in the right place at the right time.
Yes.
So we're going to, I believe there will be a time jump in this series,
mm-hmm.
which ended last we saw with, a lot of stuff was going on. Andor had been, he was kind of fully in it to win it. He had done the big payroll robbery mm-hmm. of the Empire's sector. His mother had turned out to be far more revolutionary than he was.
Yeah.
His on-again, off-again girlfriend had been tortured within an inch of sanity.
That's disturbing.
Yeah, like a lot of intense stuff. Meanwhile, like, the two people, like, who were kind of most pursuing him, one very experienced Imperial agent, this lady whose name's going to escape me.
I don't remember her name either.
And Cyril Karn,
Space Ben Shapiro.
He looks like Space Ben Shapiro, and he's like a little... He was like a Weasley rent-a-cop who always had dreams of being, like, the big military hero and...
Space Ben Shapiro.
Her name was Deidre.
Deidre, and wrestling some power for himself. The two of them did end up crossing paths, and so they are going to be a thorn. Andor's still after his sister.
And they had a love story to rival that of Kid Rock and Lauren Boebert.
Looks like we're getting more, of course, with Stellan Skarsgård's Luthen Rao.
Stellan Skarsgård's character was fantastic.
A huge scene stealer of that.
Yeah.
And also, a huge scene stealer was Genevieve O'Reilly's Mon Mothma.
Oh, Mon Mothma, yeah.
She was, like, an unsung hero of that first season.
Let's talk about this trailer real quick, though, and, like, what's different about it. Like, it has a unusual tone, because they used a kind of a bluesy rock song from Steve Earle as the background, and there's, like, an energetic sense of the rebellion is on.
Yep.
It is, but it's definitely not, like, let's go get those fascists. It's like, oh, this is bad, and people are dying.
Yes,
And there's a bit where he talks about, like, do you want to fight or do you want to win? And we see Saw Gerrera, who we know is sort of a hardcore rebellion.
Yep.
We're going to see a lot more of the, I think, morally gray aspects of running a rebellion, where they were, like, innocent people get killed.
Well, you know what? One of the darkest things in the first season, and when I was like, man, this is a very true tactic that people use in what they call asymmetrical warfare, when mm-hmm. you have a much smaller force take on a much bigger force. See also Ukraine, see also Vietnam, et cetera, et cetera. Which is, you will sometimes push the enemy in such a way that you know that they will retaliate so hard that it will then galvanize sympathy for your cause, but thousands or tens of thousands, or in Star Wars' case, maybe millions will suffer. So when they took that Imperial payroll, it led to, like, a super, like, lockdown, new strict standards.
Right.
In fact, I think that's one of the reasons why Andor ended up, like, imprisoned, was because they were, like, they changed laws so that, like, anything even tangentially related to, like, putting, like, Imperial business at risk now became, like, an official Imperial offense or whatever. And so his just being in the wrong place at the wrong time got him, like, a big prison sentence.
Yeah.
So, what's the Stellan Skarsgård character name?
Luthen Rao.
Luthen. He knew that they were going to come back hard on that, and the Empire did, and so that was part of the strategy.
Yeah.
So I expect to see more of that. It is clear that... this kind of ends with kind of a sly grin from Aunt Cassian, though. He looks a little bit more cleaned up
He's, you know, probably...
Well, he's not a reluctant member of a heist crew now. He
right.
Is part
Instead
of
looking like a scruffy guy well, who's like, okay, I'm here.
When we met him in Rogue One, he was a true believer.
Right.
And we are now seeing that he has maybe become that version of the character.
And a little disillusioned with what he had become.
Yeah.
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 I am looking forward for sure to all of these things, to seeing if they have moved the timeline forward, what has happened to Mon Mothma, who was funneling funds to the Rebels but having to work her ass off to keep it secret.
Yeah.
and sometimes in amazing ways, like throwing her husband under
Definitely
the bus.
Definitely seems, per the trailer, we're going to get a lot of action.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. There was some kind of, like, I think it's like a new TIE fighter that's like looks like somebody is in it and it's hovering and chewing up a town center. You see Andor blowing up some shit, like from again from a spaceship. I don't know what was it, TIE fighter or what. Like
we're also looks like Ben Mendelsohn is coming back as Director Krennic.
Yep. Oh, that's right.
Yep.
From the movie. So that we know it'll kind of start linking up a little bit with Rogue One. Oh, and what's K2?
K2 Alan Tudyk is coming back to voice him, of course.
Yep.
We are also we get in the trailer Saw Gerrera.
Yeah. Doing his crazy talk.
His crazy talk, but he is like the
revolutionary
of Star Wars. He is like the one guy that seems
he's
to have
Che Guevara.
He is Che Guevara. There's no other other term for that.
And I think there's an episode in the first season where he and Luthen kind of discuss internal fighting amongst rebel rebel factions, which very real thing. I think he had fun with that. I think he really likes writing that kind of crunch in there. So I'll be interested to see how all that's handled. But yeah, it is a fun kind of a little more energetic trailer that doesn't look as kind of morose as, like, if I had a criticism of the first season, it could actually be almost morose at times.
Almost.
But if we don't get Cassian one shot killing a bunch of people, you know, that's what he does.
That's what he does. He waits until he's like, there's no other situation, way out of the situation. I have to shoot the guy in front of me in the face. And I just will do it. He doesn't get involved. If he can help it, he does not do prolonged shootouts.
No.
He just ends it. And you know what? If he has to be the Luigi of Star Wars, then so be it. All right.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about some other stuff. All right, we talked about your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man a little bit when it first came out. We talked about the first like two or three episodes.
Yep. This is a new animated series.
And it has completed, and I think we all wound up really liking it.
Yeah.
Yes, I think
I was watching it every week, and it's like three episodes, and I don't like watching three episodes of anything.
This is the only way you were going to finish it. Is if they burst it at you while your enthusiasm was high.
There may be some truth to that. But I was also like, every episode I was like, what are they going to do next? This is so weird. And like this, that was an exciting thing though. And in that second half of the season, like one of the things they did is they really gave a lot of screen time to his frenemy, Lonnie.
Yep.
Who was, had like, you know, to help his brother out, had gotten into a gang thing. Finds access to some powers by an accident and near, you know, as the series season is running out, and really, like, he is up against some of the same moral choices that Peter is, and arguably in a tougher situation, you know. He does have a supportive family and stuff, the same way Pete has, like, Aunt May, and he's got a supportive girlfriend. He had people he could turn to, but he kind of took it all on himself.
Yep.
And so he's gets this really pretty tragic downfall while at the same time having a somewhat uplifting and super badass team up with Spider-Man during like one of the biggest fights in the show.
Yep.
Like, by the way, they worked together against the Scorpion. The Scorpion was dangerous.
We talked about the early days of Spider-Man where every villain was introduced was the most dangerous Spider-Man villain they ever fought.
Yeah.
And now they're all just kind of like, they're just villains to fight. But like, they definitely took that to heart. Like, the Scorpion is a badass in this. He's scary.
He
beats Peter badly enough that, like, Norman's like, you shouldn't be Spider-Man anymore.
Right. Yeah. Well, though they kind of did it slightly off-screen, it's like he impaled him on his tail, on the sharp point of his tail.
Yeah.
He also, they push the edge a little bit on the show. A little bit of light swearing.
Yeah.
And mostly they're just saying hell and damn and shit. Or I don't know if they even said shit.
I don't think so.
But like, it just feels a little edgier.
Well,
or they'll be on the verge of saying, he'll be like, what the and then, like, they'll cut.
It is weird that Spider-Man's catchphrase, instead of being, like, I'm your friendly neighbor Spider-Man, is like, what the fuck balls. I thought that was...
You know what? I actually thought that was kind of cute.
Yeah, yeah.
It's endearing the way they do it.
It is.
People are listening and they're like, is this real?
It's not real.
It's not real. But anyway, but what was I going to say when I was talking about the edginess? Oh, yeah. Scorpion definitely killed one person, a few people. When he busts in. He's basically in this... And he has a specific thing. Matt Gargan is a gang leader.
Yep.
He's kind of like the Latino rival gang leader to the... They're not entirely racial gangs, but these sort of more black gangs
that
Lonnie was joining. By the way, they did a great job with showing all the different ethnicities in them and, mm-hmm. like, color palettes, tones, and stuff like that, so that... so you see this.
But this is basically the Scorpion from the... MCU from the Spider-Verse. Went to Otto Octavius and got a power suit.
Yeah.
And now is
Otto was doing the thing. I don't know if you guys remember the early Spider-Man, the Master Planner.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Master Planner, the Big Man.
Yeah.
Master Planner turns out to be Doc Ock.
Uh-huh.
But I think they were riffing on both those things. That the Master Planner was a guy who was like basically giving powers and stuff, and this is kind of the Doc Ock is the guy empowering other people, selling
high-tech to other gangs and criminals and stuff like that.
He's doing the Tinkerer thing.
Yes.
Yeah, and so over the course of the whole, 10 episodes? Spidey's run up against several of these people, like kind of thrill-seeking robbers and gangbangers and stuff like that that have gotten their hands on these things.
Yep.
It'll eventually end up, you know, affecting his buddy Lonnie, who, you know, the jock he wanted to dislike but ended up being a really good guy.
Yep.
And
gave birth to the unicorn.
The unicorn.
Speed, man, there are some weird deep cuts in what demon. Villains and stuff they use.
But
here.
I loved how they used the unicorn.
Oh, I did too. So cool. I thought it was great.
What,
yeah,
speed demon, unicorn. We see a couple of other, like the chameleon.
Yeah, chameleon. Yep.
And they've all been like, well, like the chameleon was more like he's like almost more like a broker kind of guy.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
But they. They've been their powers are pretty scary when they're in use. Even when they're like kind of like thrill seeking criminals, you can tell they're dangerous.
Yep.
And the dynamic has changed up because Norman Osborn at this point knows who Peter is.
Yep.
And is like, I'm gonna help kind of like guide you. You know, he wants to be, you know, this is very much the MCU, but if Tony Stark had not entered into the picture. And if Norman Osborn had become that person, tried to insinuate himself.
You know, it's funny. It's like clearly the Civil War took place, but it took place prior to this. And so Spider-Man was not recruited for it.
Right.
Yep.
So
everything's a little bit off.
He wasn't Spider-Man when Civil War happened.
Correct.
But Norman Osborn was buddies with Cap because he's got a picture of him.
Yeah.
But also, like, he calls in Iron Man to go get Otto.
Yeah. Who gets a great sequence where he uses the tentacles. They're not attached to him. They're just all around the room.
Yeah, yeah.
But these guys come for him. Like, was it? Like FBI dudes at first.
Not FBI,
but SWAT dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
And he, like, takes them all out while kind of, like, dancing around and kind of singing to himself.
Yep.
It's great.
What was I going to say?
Also, I thought there's an episode where Harry Osborn and Nico... who are kind of at odds because Nico was like Spidey, was like Peter's best friend,
and kind of Norman crowded out.
Yeah, Harry's closer, and she doesn't understand why.
Right, Harry's also a rich guy. And he's like an influencer who's like a very, you know, kind of flashy dresser influencer.
And she thinks he maybe is kind of a phony, and the way the two of them bonded, I thought was really good and really, really believable.
There was some great writing in some of those scenes where I was like, man, it just elevated scenes that could have been pedestrian.
Agreed.
When things all start coming together...
we haven't talked about Daredevil.
Daredevil
shows up in like episode 7, I think.
Yeah.
Peter's at... He's at Osborn.
Yep. Or Oscorp.
Oscorp. And he's at his internship, and he sees someone like running out the window, and he goes up to the rooftop, and it's Daredevil, who like is there stealing something.
Yep.
And the two of them fight it out, and Daredevil's basically like... Daredevil is like... He's like, you know, he doesn't have any powers... But he very quickly gets the upper hand because he's been doing this a lot longer, and he knows how to fight.
And Peter at some point says something. He's like, "Wow, you fight really good." And he's like, "You don't."
You don't.
And then, like, yeah, with a few, you know, bounced billy clubs, like, takes him out.
Yeah.
And I meant to say, in addition to Norman Osborn knowing Peter's secret, his son Harry
figures that
stumbles
quickly.
Across
yeah.
it,
yeah.
essentially, and kind of becomes a slightly not super effective, but sometimes but good to be there, his man in the chair in the background. This is all using, at least initially, the Oscorp. He upgrades to that, their costume, which is a pretty cool-looking white costume.
It
looks like it's like the Future Foundation.
It's the Future Foundation version, yeah.
Yeah. It's a cool-looking costume, but it will give way to the classic.
Speaking of costumes, I don't think we talked about this, but there's a bit where they're trying out new costumes for him, and they use the costume from the Slingers miniseries.
Yep. Such a deep cut.
That is a deep cut.
And there's been a lot of deep cuts in this show, and I really enjoy them. To also say one more thing about the Daredevil thing is, the way Daredevil talked to him while they're kind of fighting and stuff like that, I really like, because Daredevil was, you know, kind of sly.
Yep.
He's a smart dude, but also empathetic.
Yeah.
He's, like, recognizes that Peter is in some way not a bad person.
Yeah.
He's probably, you know, being manipulated or duped or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's just, in the end, he's just kind of like, well, let's just wrap this up.
He's trying to let him in. He's like, you know, Osborn's not what you think he is. Like, he's trying to tell him that.
Yep.
And, oops, Osborn is not
what you think he is. Well, I also like when Peter gets beat up by the Scorpion, Osborn sends in the Goblin Glider to rescue it.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he, like, has to, like, grab onto it. It's, you know, like this cool drone-type thing.
Yeah.
And he's got to get it out of there. That was a beatdown.
There's a lot of foreshadowing of, like, what's going to happen with Norman, and then at the end, they foreshadow something else. So.
Yep.
Was not expecting that.
So, do we want to talk about the origin thing?
Yeah. Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning.
Yeah. The opening has Peter Parker getting bit by a spider that comes from, like, a portal that Doctor Strange opens.
Yep. It also, like, their school for gifted and talented gets wrecked, Midtown High or whatever.
Yeah.
Venom symbiote.
Becoming, like, I guess I'd say one of the kind of core differences that changes this world, but there's also lots of little differences.
But also, like, there's a Venom symbiote who seems to be coming from some sort of, like, extra dimension or something.
Right.
Which we will see more of, because Osborn has, like, it created a sort of portal-type technology so that the idea is to kind of, like, explore space without having to, like, launch rockets. You can kind of open, like, portals and gateways and stuff.
Yep.
Only it seems like he kind of might have opened one to, like, the symbiote world or...
I think it might be, like, Null's planet.
It looked like some kind of massive godlike creature that was trying to get through, and Doctor Strange returns for the, like, finale.
Yep.
And he is, like, you know, working his butt off trying to keep this thing at bay. Spider-Man is then full-on helping him.
Yep.
And...
then he winds up using the time gem.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And that leads to a time loop.
Yep.
And now Peter has created himself.
Peter was bitten by a spider that was powered by his own blood.
Yep. Yeah.
It's a little weird.
I love this. I thought this was great. I know y'all were not as big on it.
It's only because, like, I don't mind that they changed up where it came from. It's that by, like, linking it to a time loop, it becomes a thing where I'm like, there's no initial thing that gave anyone the powers. He got the power from himself because he had it. And I'm like, that's some John Connor bullshit.
It's the one thing you didn't like in the show.
You know, I could come up with a few criticisms here and there. I actually... Peter, like, the traditional costume, I think they need a darker blue and some, like, spotted blacks in there to show how dark it is. I don't love the look of it. I like all the animation with it. Like, all the stuff he was doing and all the end fight scenes with him and Doctor Strange and the Venom symbiote stuff getting through. That was all great. A lot of the fights and stuff were very cool, and the character animation is great. But I don't like how they depicted the costume.
Okay. I had no gripes about it.
Yeah, me either.
Anyway, so I won't be watching anymore.
I loved the animation. I loved the look of all the characters. Doctor Strange in particular, I thought, had a fantastic design.
There are small uses of, like, Daredevil, Doctor Strange, even little bits of Iron Man, and some of his other villains, like Doc showing up and stuff like that. Ock seems like a really... dangerous guy in the running.
They did a good job with that.
We now know that he's got a big rivalry and a past with Oscorp.
Yep.
And that's going to clearly be a thing. And in the end, there is a, like, about 7 or 8 minutes of the cartoon that are, like, foreshadowing stuff
to come. All kinds of stuff.
Crazy stuff with Venom. Crazy stuff with Aunt May sneaking off to meet somebody in prison.
Yeah, that was a big reveal.
And they were like, what?
Harry creating a new company.
Yep.
Yep. Daredevil
having a protege.
Yep.
Yep.
Also, just this the scene with Doctor Strange and Peter talking.
Yeah.
Which had the Watcher in the sky.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice.
I caught that too. Yeah. So yeah. I didn't catch it after, but somebody.
It was an important moment for this version of Peter.
And there's also a secret for Nico.
Yep. Big secret for Nico. Yeah.
Which I'm happy to see.
I am the only problem I have with them burning through it as quickly as they did is I'm ready for season 2 right now, and it's going to be a while.
It's going to be a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think this is, like I said before, it's on par with X-Men 97. And,
I agree.
One of my favorite versions of the Spider-Man cartoon.
Yeah.
Really the interesting good. Thing that it did that I think was smart, although it wasn't something I would have thought was a good idea. It seems counterintuitive. Was instead of like working within the tradition, like kind of like Spectacular Spider-Man did, what, 10, 15 years ago, whatever it was. It was almost at all ends was trying to sort of subvert or reinvent or kind of do things a different way. He didn't have any of his traditional best friends except Harry, and even that was very different dynamics.
Yeah.
They undid the jock bully thing. His mentorship was different. Few of the major villains that we know were in there. Even though Osborn plays a big role, he's not the Green Goblin yet.
Sure, not yet.
So I really liked seeing all the, like, never quite knowing what they were going to do, and giving Lonnie a big scene, and giving Nico and Harry and all those people, like, lots of scenes. So,
yeah.
I think we would all recommend it.
Yep, for sure. All right, I think that'll wrap it up for us this time. I'll be back next week with more, and until that time,
yo,
Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.